the headlines. Sirens warning of incoming fire are heard in Tel Aviv, moments after Palestinian resistance groups fire rockets from the Gaza Strip. Iran says an agreement over the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal hinges on Washington's realistic reactions to Tehran's proposals. Plus, the U.S. is planning to supply $1 billion worth of more weapons to Ukraine. This is News. Thanks for joining us. More Palestinians have fallen victim to Israeli strikes as the regime continues to hit the besieged Gaza Strip for the second consecutive day. The latest attacks have killed 5 people, bringing to 15 the number of those who lost their lives since Friday. Israeli attacks have also wounded over 120 in the past 2 days. Israel has vowed to press ahead with its aerial operations. Palestinian resistance groups have also continued their retaliatory attacks. According to Israeli media, rocket sirens have sounded in several cities, including in Tel Aviv. This after the Islamic Jihad said it has hit Tel Aviv and some other cities with a barrage of rocket fire. Meanwhile, condemnations are pouring in following Israel's fatal airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, says the attacks once again showed the Israeli regime is seeking aggression and occupation. Also, the IRGC's chief commander, Hossein Salami, says the Zionist regime will pay another heavy price for its recent crimes. Turkey has also strongly condemned the air raids. Ankara says it is unacceptable to kill civilians. Yemen's National Salvation Government and Ansarallah movement condemned the Israeli airstrikes as well. Ansarallah also reaffirmed Palestinians' right to respond to the aggression. Russia and the EU have called for maximum restraint in Gaza. Qatar, Jordan, Algeria, Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Iraq's Kataib Hezbollah group, and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation have all condemned the Israeli aggression. One of Kandil's our correspondent joining us from occupied Ramallah, also Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, is a journalist and political commentator joining us from London. Welcome to you both. Mona Kandil, first over to you. We understand that many of these rockets have actually made it into Israel. Tell us about that, and of course, any developments that you have for us on what is going on.
Yes, that's right. A barrage of rockets was fired by the jihad movement towards central Israel on a Saturday evening, with sirens sounding also in Tel Aviv, and Israelis had reported loud hearing of explosions overhead, according to Israeli media. Sirens have been blaring throughout the day as well along the Gaza Strip border and in the coastal cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod. Now we are receiving at least 20 Israelis have been transferred to the hospital of Ashkelon as rocket attacks on southern Israel. This is what we receive now, that at least 20 Israelis have been transferred to hospitals in Ashkelon, southern Israel. Earlier, we have to mention that Israeli military said they expect the 350 rockets had been fired from the Gaza Strip, the coastal enclave, into the settlements around the Gaza Strip and into southern Israel cities. They claimed also, regardless of these facts, that the Iron Dome intercepts rockets over Sderot and nearby towns. But now maybe the situation has changed, with the Israeli military revealing that there are casualties among the Israelis.
Well, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, when you take a look at this war that Israel has waged on the Gaza Strip, it's beyond words how they have described this. And really, it's very hard to get past what they have called a preemptive operation. That's something that has not happened. So they have taken artillery fire, resulting in the deaths of 15 so far. How can this be described other than purely a war crime?
Well, I think it certainly is yet another example of Israeli war crimes, and it's another example of really the world international community also really being part and parcel of this crime, because the Israelis, I mean, Biden was there not so long ago, and he effectively green-lighted Israel to do exactly what they're doing now. So I don't think we could forget that they have that full backing of the Anglo-American, if you like, imperialist, support within what they're doing. So the crimes, like the five-year-old young child that's just been killed by the initial bombing, the crimes of 15 more dead, you know, hundreds injured in Palestine. Again, that blood is firmly not just on the hands of the Israelis, but it's broader alliance as well. And of course, what they're doing is they're exposing themselves yet again, because this response that they're provoking, and it's a response based on their own panic and their own fears, because look, the Islamic Jihad, whose member Bassem al-Assadi, the commander ostensibly of the force in the West Bank, the Islamic Jihad hadn't made a response. They didn't fire a single rocket, but they were so scared of the effectiveness and the power of Islamic Jihad on the ground to do the response, that they had to do what's called a preemptive strike. Well, this is not new. They've been bombing preemptively innocent civilian Palestinians in neighborhoods, in residential areas of Palestine for decades. They're still doing that. And the reality is that the Israelis have killed five times as many Palestinians in this period in 2022, even before this conflict has kicked off now, than they did in 2021. And what they've got to remember is the last wars resulted in hundreds of Israelis being also injured and killed as a result of the newfound ability of the Palestinian resistance to actually fire back. And that ability includes the Burak 100 rockets, you know, which has a 100-kilometer range, which can reach Tel Aviv. And we're hearing that the Islamic Jihad and the resistance are saying they've already hit Tel Aviv. So the consequences, as the IRGC commander Salami said earlier on today, are very dire. They will pay a heavy price yet again. And one of the heaviest prices will be yet more proof that the Palestinian resistance is capable of stinging the Israelis like never before. And if they continue the battle as they did last time, you know, they're going to get a real surprise. On the ground, of course, Palestinians, the Qassam Brigade alone has 40,000 Palestinian soldiers, recruits that are ready to fight. I don't think Israel will do any kind of invasion. They're thinking they can get away with this kind of cold-blooded murder. Let's see how far they're willing to take the battle. Certainly, Ziad al-Nakhala has said, the head of the Islamic Jihad, who's currently in Iran, has said this will be a confrontation that will not stop if the Israelis, of course, carry on. I think the resistance is all too ready to teach them, I think, another lesson.
Okay, Mona Kandil, there were some images that came through, very, very recent, that showed that there were some who were out on the streets in the occupied territories. I'm not too sure which town it was, that were throwing stones at Israeli security forces. At least that's the customary scene that you see. Are we seeing people who have come out in protest in the occupied territories against Israeli military action against the Gaza Strip?
Well, last night, following the airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, Palestinians took to the streets in the Ramallah area in order to condemn the bloody killings of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Today, there was a protest in the Bir Zeit University. Then, students of Palestinians, university students from Bir Zeit University, headed to the Israeli military checkpoint of Beit Il. But it was not this, let's say, serious protest or clashes took place. As you have mentioned, there were Palestinians throwing stones at the Israeli soldiers at the military checkpoint. But we can't say that there is a protest and demonstrations taking place up till the moment. Of course, Palestinians are angry, they are slamming what's going on, what's needed, as the Palestinians are demanding for the resistance groups for a joint reaction, for unity. That's why we heard about this joint operation room that includes all the Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip, and they are saying they are continuing to meet, and there would be an appropriate response, but it's not clear what's the form of this response. We have also to say that Israel revealed, Israeli military revealed that following its airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, the Israeli soldiers arrested at least 19 Palestinians, members of the jihad movement in the occupied West Bank. And we have to remind our viewers that this operation in the main place had taken place because the Israeli military said there was immediate threat and direct threat from the jihad movement following arresting Bassam Saadi, this Palestinian leader of the jihad movement in Jenin. And there was threats from the jihad movement to Israel to release him. Otherwise, there would be anti-Israel operations and activities here in the occupied West Bank. So they claim they were expecting a major operation or anti-military, anti-Israel attacks and operations here in the occupied West Bank and the lands occupied in 1948. And here the Israelis carried out the airstrikes, killing al-Jabari in the Gaza Strip, in addition to a number of civilians. We are speaking about 15 Palestinians, including a five-year-old girl, in addition to dozens of Palestinians, and even hundreds of Palestinians had been wounded, beside the destruction of the buildings and the homes in the Gaza Strip. And now Palestinians are waiting whether Israel would be expanding the airstrikes, or it would only be focusing its airstrikes on the members of the jihad movement. Nothing is clear up till the moment. Egypt and Jordan as well doing maybe their utmost in order to mediate between the Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip, including Hamas, because up till the moment, there's no clear stance from Hamas. The Israelis are even saying that Hamas would not be interfering up till the moment or until the moment.
Thank you very much for that. Let me thank Mona Kandil, a correspondent from Occupied Ramallah. Thank you, Mona. And Simo Sinabas, thank you so much. Journalist and political commentator from London. Thank you. Moving on with the news, Iran's foreign minister says an agreement over the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal hinges on U.S. realistic reactions to Iran's constructive proposals. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the comments in a phone call with his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi. He said that Iran is actively working to attain a strong and lasting agreement. The Chinese minister expressed support for Iran's stance in the talks, which he described as logical and wise. He hoped that diplomatic efforts would lead to a deal on restoring the JCPOA. Iran and the P4+1 continue expert-level talks in Vienna for a third day. This is their first meeting since March, when negotiations stalled. Mohamed Morandi is an advisor to Iran's negotiating team in Vienna. He believes it is still too soon to be either optimistic or pessimistic about the outcome of the JCPOA revival talks.
I think we should not be pessimistic, nor should we be optimistic. There has been progress. If you read between the lines from what European officials are saying, it's quite clear that they have adjusted their position on multiple issues. So that means there is progress. However, we still haven't reached the end of the negotiations. We are not quite sure. We're not sure at all whether the Europeans and the Americans, especially the Americans, will accept Iran's conditions. As I said, there is some movement on the Western side, which is a plus. But as they have been saying, for a very long period of time. Nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. So we're still going to have to wait a bit to see what happens.
8 civilians are dead in a bombing that hit a neighborhood in the western part of the Afghan capital, Kabul. Police say that 18 people were also injured when the device attached to a handcart detonated in a shopping center. The marketplace is located in a residential area, mostly inhabited by the Shia Hazaras. The Taliban government says the bombing was the work of the enemies of Islam and the country. That's after Daesh terrorist group claimed responsibility for the attack. Iran has also strongly condemned the bombing that hit during the Muslim calendar month of Muharram. Called on the Taliban to make further security arrangements for the morning gatherings held during the month every year. Moving on to Ukraine, the U.S. is preparing a new batch of weapons for Kyiv, this time worth $1 billion to help it fight Russia. The weapons package is yet to be endorsed by President Joe Biden. But if signed, it will provide Ukraine with HIMARS, advanced surface-to-air missile systems, and armored vehicles. Last Monday, the Pentagon announced a separate military aid package for Ukraine worth some $550 million. The tranche included advanced rockets and artillery guns. So far, the U.S. has given around $8.8 billion in military aid to Kyiv since February, when the conflict began. Russian officials have repeatedly warned Washington and NATO against offering military assistance to Kyiv. The Kremlin says such shipments only add fuel to the fire of war and prolongs it. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
When your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless.
Azoru Sayyidi wa Mawlai wa Mu'tamadi wa Rajai.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum وحرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this phrase of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة. O Aba Abdullah, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you, إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ, until the day of resurrection. Up to this part, we have conditioned our unity with the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, with the target إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ, until the day of resurrection. But this does not imply that our promise ends with the day of resurrection, but it only reveals perpetuity. This is because the one who is loyal to the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam throughout the period of this world, in the true sense of the word, will never separate from them. In the beautiful words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, we read, "Man ahabbana kana ma'ana, aw ja'a ma'ana yawm al-qiyamati hakadha, thumma jama'a bayna as-sabbabatayn." Whosoever loves us will be with us, or will come with us on the day of resurrection, like this. And then the Imam joined the forefingers of his two hands. This means the man or woman must be with them. The ones who love them will be with them and will not for a second separate from them. That is because the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam are the only possible mediation on earth. There is not a bit of corruption or defect in them. The Ahlul Bayt are the ones who Allah has أذهب عنهم الرجس. He has removed any hidden or manifest uncleanness from them. The Holy Prophet has said regarding the revelation of the verse of purification, نَحْنُ أَهْلُ بَيْتٍ طَهَّرَهُمُ اللَّهِ. We are the Ahlul Bayt who Allah purified. In an important fragment, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, إنما أمر الله عز وجل بطاعة الرسول لأنه معصوم مطهر لا يأمر بمعصية. Allah has declared his creatures to obey the messenger because he is infallible and purified, and he does not order to sin. وإنما أمر بطاعة أولي الأمر لأنهم معصومون مطهرون لا يأمرون بمعصية. And he has decreed to obey those in authority because they are infallible and purified, and they do not order to sin. Imam Hussein alayhi salam has also said, إِنَّ أَهْلُ بَيْتٍ أَكْرَمَنَا اللَّهُ بِالْإِسْلَامِ وَاخْتَارَنَا وَاصْطَفَانَا وَاجْتَبَانَا فَأَذْهَبَ عَنَّا الرِّجْسَ وَطَهَّرَنَا تَطْهِيرًا. We, the Ahlul Bayt, are those whom Allah has honored by Islam, chosen from among all creatures, and removed any uncleanness and purified a thorough purification. Uncleanness, Imam says, is the same as doubt. Imam continues, we never have any doubt about Allah and His religion.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplified. It clarifies. It takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah. That's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is: do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates Him. He understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So the Zair, the man or woman on earth, has to stay with the Ahlul Bayt until the day of resurrection. Not just the fact that the promise ends with the day of resurrection, but this ila yawm al-qiyamah only reveals perpetuity. The one who wants to stay with the Ahlul Bayt must not doubt about them. Inna shakka wal ma'siyata fi an-nar laysa minna wala ilayna. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, doubt and sin are in fire. They are neither from us, nor do they come to us. Because the Allah, رَفَعَ اللَّهُ عَنْهُمُ الرِّجْسِ, because Allah has removed uncleanness from them. In Ziyara Jami'a Kabira, Imam Hadi alayhi salam says, وَأَشْهَدُ أَنَّكُمُ الْأَئِمَّةُ الرَّاشِدُونَ الْمَهْدِيُونَ الْمَعْصُومُونَ الْمُكَرَّمُونَ. I bear witness that all of you are guide leaders, rightly guided, infallible, and Allah has kept you safe from unruly disorderliness. عَسَمَكُمُ اللَّهُ مِنَ الزَّلَلِ وَآمَنَكُم مِنَ الْفِتَنِ وَطَهَّرَكُم مِنَ الدَّنَسِ. Allah removed uncleanness from you, وَأَذْهَبَ عَنْكُمُ الرِّجْسِ, and has cleaned you with a thorough cleansing. وَطَهَّرَكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. Verily, Allah, who is free from any defect, has placed prophethood and imamah in a household which is free from any uncleanness. Why? Because men can realize the dignity that they deserve through the mediation of the Ahlul Bayt, because they will be immune from infidelity. They will be removed from any carnal desires and sins, and they will, God willing, have a happy life both in this world and hereafter by meeting Allah and abiding in paradise. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
Africa Today.
The government of Eritrea has compelled the Israeli regime to close its embassy in the country after it rejected an ambassador appointed by the Tel Aviv regime. Now, the decision marks yet another moment of continued isolation of the Israeli regime in Africa. It's not surprising that Eritrea took that decision because the Israeli regime, which is trying to infiltrate Africa, has deeply rooted racist and apartheid policies. In fact, Jacques Yosef, a senior Israeli rabbi, believes that the people of Africa are monkeys. Let's take a listen. Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and it's always great welcoming you here at Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative analysis of news making headlines in Africa. Now, this week's edition is focusing on the decision by the Israeli regime to close its embassy in Eritrea, a strategic Horn of Africa nation. We're asking, is the move a pointer to further isolation of the Tel Aviv regime in Africa? The second part of our program today will be on the drought currently ravaging parts of Sudan, where aid agencies say that nearly one quarter of the entire population will struggle to access food in the coming months. We're asking, what needs to be done to utilize Sudan's massive potential in agriculture? Our experts will be giving us their incisive analysis on these two subjects today.
Eritrea rejects Israeli regime. Israeli regime's Prime Minister Yair Lapid has been forced to close the regime's embassy in Eritrea as authorities in this strategic northeast African country have rejected the ambassador appointed 2 years ago by Tel Aviv. On July 5, 2020, the regime's Foreign Ministry's Appointments Committee appointed Ismail Khaldi to serve as ambassador to Eritrea. The approval of his appointment was, however, rejected by Eritrean authorities. According to Israeli media outlets, the embassy had remained empty in the aftermath of the Eritrean government's decision.
While the Eritrean government has not issued a statement on the closure of the Israeli embassy in Asmara, the decision comes as many international organizations have clearly stated that Israel is an apartheid regime. So, just as the South African white minority apartheid regime was isolated internationally, there are indicators that many African countries, including Eritrea, believe that Tel Aviv is a racist regime. Clearly, early this year, Amnesty International stated that Israel is an apartheid regime.
Amnesty International is here today to call on the authorities of Israel to put an end to the system of apartheid it is maintaining against all Palestinians living under their effective control, whether in Israel itself, in the OPT, or as refugees in other countries. We are here today to call on the international community to take resolute action against the crime of humanity being perpetrated in order to maintain the system of apartheid.
Now, for more on the decision to close the Israeli regime's embassy in Asmara, we contacted Inem Richardson, the co-founder of Thomas Sankara Center for African Liberation and Unity. Thanks a lot for joining us today, madam.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Now, what prompted the government of Eritrea to reject the ambassador appointed by the Israeli regime?
Well, one thing to understand about Eritrea is that Eritrea is a country that is extremely adamant and proud about guarding its own national sovereignty post its independence. And so Eritrea is the only country in Africa that does not have a military relationship with the United States through AFRICOM, a huge assertion of sovereignty on a continent that's otherwise pretty dominated by imperialist intervention. Eritrea also has a long history of solidarity with the Palestinian people, dating at least as far back to its independence struggle. So Eritrea and the Palestinian Liberation Organization and the General Palestinian Freedom Struggle were really close allies throughout the latter half of the 20th century. Israel, on the other hand, took the side of Ethiopia, which was under a very repressive regime during the time that was repressive not only to the Eritreans who were fighting for their independence, but also for many of the peoples within Ethiopia. So Israel has this history of intervening in the Horn of Africa against the interest of the Eritrean people, as well as the interest of the Ethiopian people as well.
Eritrea is strategically located in the Horn of Africa on the Red Sea and the Bab-el-Mandeb Strait, making it a geopolitically strategic and important state along the world's busiest shipping lane. Eritrea's Foreign Minister Osman Saleh Mohammed believes that the unipolar world order is coming to an end and that the conflicts in Africa are instigated by external powers.
In as far as global trends is concerned, I had stated, and I quote, the world is on the cusp of a new world order. All vital parameters indicate that the unipolar world order has come to an end or is in its twilight year. The economic power balance is inexorably changing with a spike in attendant intense rivalries and upheavals.
What are the implications for the Israeli regime following Eritrea's rejection of its envoy, particularly considering the strategic importance of this country?
As you mentioned, Eritrea is located on the Red Sea. It straddles, you know, it's right between these two parts of the world. It's not so far from Yemen and the countries of the Gulf, but it's also part of the African continent. So the Horn of Africa is very much like a gateway into the rest of Africa from Israel's point of view, based off of where Israel is located. So by not having access to Eritrea in this way, it prevents Israel in some way that blocks Israel off from the rest of the continent. And Israel has had a long history of intervention, not just in the Horn, but other parts of Africa. Solidarity with the apartheid regime of South Africa historically, intervention in Uganda as well in the 70s. But through not having access to Eritrea, which would be one of the closest points of access into the African continent for Israel, it's a step back in terms of being able to penetrate directly and access these other parts of the continent as well.
Last year, at least 14 countries, including Eritrea, vehemently opposed Israeli regime's observer status at the African Union and agreed to expel it from the 55-member bloc. Now, a leading Pan-Africanist, PLO Lumumba, says he sees no merit in the Israeli regime being an observer member of the African Union.
I find no merit in Israel enjoying observer status at the African Union. And thirdly, I am puzzled why that is important at all. I do not see any value at all that is added by Israel enjoying observer status at the AU, unless there are certain subterranean political interests which are at play in this particular matter.
Activists in African countries have been working to intensify their struggle against Israeli regime's apartheid practices against Palestinians. These activists say Israel must be isolated the same way that apartheid South Africa was sanctioned. In February, the African Union suspended the debate on whether to withdraw Israel's accreditation as an observer to the bloc. The move by Eritrea to reject Israeli regime's ambassador is seen as a pointer of further isolation of the regime in Africa.
We certainly hope so, and I do believe that Israel's relationship with Africa as a whole is really on shaky grounds. It's not something that's very stable or sustainable because it's very unpopular with the majority of the people who are living within Africa. Because Israel has such a close relationship to a lot of the countries that have historically intervened and even in recent times intervened for regime change in Africa, because of, you know, Israel's relationship to the United States, France, the UK, and other colonial and neocolonial powers, it means that sometimes African countries don't always act within the interests of their people, as well as their own national interests as a whole. But because of how generally unpopular Israel is in Africa among the people, it is really hard to, this sort of relationship would be really, really hard to defend and sustain. So Eritrea leading the fight against the normalization of this sort of relationship is really significant.
The Israeli regime is known to meddle in the internal affairs of African countries in a bid to push its nefarious agenda. Now, recently, the regime's notorious Mossad spy agency was implicated in a plot to overthrow the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, is Eritrea at risk of being destabilized by the Israeli regime?
Eritrea is going to do everything it can to maintain its sovereignty, which it's demonstrated time and time again that it prioritizes its own sovereignty in the face of a world that is, you know, dominated by Western imperialism. And then in this sort of vein, Israel's allyship with the Western imperialists. So Eritrea is going to try everything to guard its own sovereignty, but it is threatened for regime change already by Israel and ally states. So we see U.S. sanctions on Eritrea as one example of this. So there's already an effort to try to destabilize Eritrea in this way. And this is something that is at risk. The risk is intensified by this decision to reject Israel, because Eritrea is on such a divided continent, and there is a lack of concrete African unity on a political level. It really does make the risk heightened in a lot of ways.
Addressing the African Union summit held in Addis Ababa last February, Palestinian Prime Minister urged African countries to reject the Israeli regime due to the apartheid policies it imposes on Palestinians.
Israel should never be rewarded for its violation and for the apartheid regime it does impose on the Palestinian people. As an entity, Israel has progressed from extremism to militarism to colonial expansion.
Eritrea and other African countries have for long supported the liberation of Palestinian territories occupied by the Israeli regime. So why is the liberation of Palestine important for African countries?
The liberation of Palestine is super important for African people and for the liberation of the African continent. If you look at historically, we see that almost pretty much all of the revolutionary struggles, all of the struggles that were in line with the people in Africa, whether it's the Eritrean struggle for their independence, whether it's Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso, whether it's the struggle of the peoples of South Africa against apartheid and also against settler colonialism and these things, we see that the people are always on the side of Palestine because we recognize that the history is very, very similar. It's a history of colonialism. It's a history of imperialism, of exploitation, and of occupation. It's the same enemies. Israel was created through the United Kingdom or by the United Kingdom during this epoch of the British Empire, the same British Empire that dominated the majority of Africa during the late 19th, 20th century. So we have this shared history of struggle against oppression.
Well, there you have it. The shared history of the struggle against colonialism and imperialism is a factor in Africa's opposition to the Israeli regime and support for Palestinian independence struggle. I'd like to thank our guest, the co-founder of Thomas Sankara Center for African Liberation and Unity, for her insight today. We now take a short break before our next topic, which is on the drought ravaging Sudan. So stay with us.
Drought ravaging Sudan.
Aid agencies say millions in Sudan will struggle to access food in the coming months, including 3.1 million people facing emergency levels of hunger. Displaced children and their families, refugees, and people directly impacted by conflict are likely to be most vulnerable to hunger.
The ongoing crisis has been exacerbated by a worsening economic situation, recurring violence throughout many states, a poor harvest, and the global price shocks in the fuel, grains, and other food commodities.
Sudanese farmers are struggling to find new crops as the government has failed to buy their harvest under promised terms. A Sudanese farmer says they are facing a difficult situation.
The summer season is threatened with collapse. 50%, 70% of us might not plant. And that puts the food supply in question. Farmers are in a difficult position. People are in a difficult position. The situation has become very difficult.
Now, to discuss the food security situation in Sudan, we contacted Adel Abdelati, the chairman of the Sudan of the Future Political Bloc. Now, aid agencies say Sudan is facing a severe shortage of food and medicines, leading to the spread of malnutrition and diseases. Now, is the situation getting worse in this country?
Yes, unfortunately, Sudan is facing a big shortage of food. Sudan is importing wheat from Ukraine and from Russia. And we know that now there is no supplies from these two countries. And about 18 million of people are facing the danger of hunger and shortage of food. This situation should be addressed and should be solved as soon as possible, because otherwise we will have a humanitarian crisis in Sudan.
Thousands of protesters continue to organize massive protests in Sudan's capital and other parts of the country in demonstrations against the country's ruling military generals. A Sudanese protester says they will continue with street demonstrations to ensure that remnants of the former regime don't remain in power.
We believe this revolution needs to be monitored so as not to be hijacked by members of the former regime or even by political parties.
Apart from the Ukraine crisis, has the political instability in Sudan contributed to the food shortage in the country?
That is true. The instability in the country, of course, a situation where there is lack of security, there is lack of stability on the political level. There is no, in fact, government. We don't have a prime minister. We don't have a government which has some kind of popular support. And all the time we have demonstrations. And in fact, we have a failed government and a failed state. And this, of course, is worsening the situation. Also, bad economic decisions, because farmers in Sudan, they have collected a very good collection of wheat in this year. But the policies of the government and the policies of the agriculture ban, by forcing non-commercial, non-rental, prices for the Sudanese wheat has resulted in farmers refusing to sell their products.
A joint report from the World Food Programme and the Food and Agriculture Organization last June concluded that 15 million people in Sudan face acute food insecurity. These UN agencies say projections for later in the year indicate that this might be increasing to some 18 million people.
WFP Sudan has just completed its food security assessment. Unfortunately, our worst fears have been confirmed. We estimate at this point in time that some 15 million people are going hungry in Sudan. Our projections for later in the year indicate that this might be increasing to some 18 million people.
NATO's imperialism, military expansionism, which ignited the Ukraine conflict, has disrupted global food supply and worsened the food crisis for African countries. These US-led NATO countries have spent billions of dollars in military assistance to Ukraine while ignoring appeals by UN agencies for emergency funds to alleviate the suffering of tens of millions in need of urgent food aid. Sudan is one of the countries facing inadequate international response to the drought situation.
The response of the international community is not enough. Of course, there was alert from the international organization dealing with food security, dealing with health, But these alerts finished with only alerting, and there was no quick response from international community, international relief organizations. And before all, there was no good response from the government.
Sudan's Minister of Trade and Supply, Amal Saleh Saad, recently called for agricultural investments in the country and for the exploitation of the vast Sudanese agricultural lands, adding that the country could serve as a food basket for other countries in the region. Now, Sudan is a country blessed with abundant water resources and fertile soils, and was once referred to as Africa's emerging bread basket. So what really went wrong?
That is true that Sudan has a lot of water resources, a very fertilized land, and a very hardworking people, farmers. And this could be a good assist for Sudan to be one of the leaders in Africa, if not in the whole world, in providing food and food security for its citizens and for Africa. But the problem is a bad governance. The problem is political before all. Sudan has lacked security, has lacked stability for the last, we can say, 33 years. After the toppling of Bashir, we did not have stable government. We have, like, for 2 years, a mixed government of civilian and military, but also it was a very weak government. Now we have a military government which is faced by very strong opposition from young people, from political parties. And in this situation, you can't manage the country in a good way.
Now, so what measures can be taken to restore Sudan's glory as an agricultural country capable of meeting its needs and exporting food to other African countries?
The first step is to settle the political crisis and to build a stable government, a government with some kind of popular support and political support, because the military alone could not rule the country, and they have big challenges to maintain stability and security. The second measure is to allocate money for investing in agriculture sector, and before all, to provide very quick support to farmers in order to supply the market with food products and with agriculture products. Also, there should be a good supporting policies for agriculture in the country, and concentrating on transforming the agriculture from traditional agriculture to industrial agriculture.
Well, democratically elected government and massive investment in agriculture are critical if Sudan is to use its potential as Africa's breadbasket. That's the opinion of our guest today, Adil Abdel Ati, the chairman of the Sudan of the Future Political Bloc. I'd like to thank him for his incisive analysis today. Well, that brings us to the end of yet another edition of Africa Today. It was great having you watch the show today. Please let us know what you think by dropping us a line through our social media. And goodbye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.